Putinriyantakaranat Padana Jiva Samhitat Bhatata Pritak Drashta Bhagavan Brahma Samhita Bhuta. The five elements. Indriya, the senses. Antakaranat, from the mind. Pradhanat, from the pradhana. Jiva Sanghitat, from the jiva soul. Atma, the paramatma. Tata, so. Pritak, different. Drashta, the seer. Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. Brahma Sangita, called Brahma, called Brahman. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Param Brahma, is the seer. He is different from the jiva soul, or individual living entity, who is combined with the senses, the five elements, and consciousness. Purport. A clear conception of the complete whole is given herewith. The living entity is different from the material elements, and the supreme living entity, the personality of Godhead, who is the creator of the material elements, is also different from the individual living entity. This philosophy is propounded by Lord Chaitanya as Achintya Bedha Beda Tattva. Everything is simultaneously one with and different from everything else. The cosmic manifestation created by the Supreme Lord by His material energy is also simultaneously different and non-different from Him. The material energy is non-different from the Supreme Lord, but at the same time, because that energy is acting in a different way, it is different from Him. Similarly, the individual living entity is also one with and different from the Supreme Lord. This simultaneously one and different philosophy is the perfect conclusion of the Bhagavata school, as confirmed here by Kapila Deva. Living entities are compared to the sparks of a fire. As stated in the previous verse, fire, flame, smoke, and firewood are combined together. Here the living entity, the material elements, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are combined together. The exact position of the living entities is that just like that of a sparks of a fire, they are part and parcel. The material energy is compared to the smoke. The fire is also part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. In the Vishnu Purana, it is said that whatever we can see or experience, either in the material or spiritual world, is an expansion of the different energies of the Supreme Lord. As fire distributes its light and heat from one place, the Supreme Personality of Godhead distributes His different energies all over the creation. The four principles of the Vaishnava philosophical doctrine are Shuddha Advaita, purified oneness, Dvaita, Advaita, simultaneous oneness and difference, Vishishta Advaita, and Dvaita. All four principles of Vaishnava philosophy are based on the thesis of Srimad Bhagavatam, explained in these two verses. So here Kapiladeva is speaking very philosophically. What he says matches up very closely to what is described in the Vedanta Sutra by Srila Vyas and explained properly by the various Vaishnavacharyas. The relationship between the Supreme Lord and his energies. The impersonalists fail to properly understand how the Lord expands into creation by his energies. They presume that the Lord is one and cannot expand, that duality is not real, that somehow by a power of illusion, there is an evolution of illusion, of duality. But that's not real. That's the Mayavad idea. But we and all the other theists believe that every God has his many energies. Parasya Shaktir. Vividaiva Shruyate. Swabhaviki Ganabala Kriyacha. The Supreme Absolute Truth is not formless, not without qualities. And the material creation is real, and it is coming from him as his expanded energy. By his energies, the Lord creates, maintains, destroys, and in the spiritual world, he has his pleasure pastimes with his devotees, all through the agency of his energies. There is duality in the material world, and it is real. And there is duality in the spiritual world, and it is even more real. And the reality of duality is possible by the action of the Lord's shaktis, his energies. Energy, you learn in high school, energy means potency to do something, ability to do something, that is energy. I have a dry cell battery, and it's able, I can put the battery inside my cassette recorder and play a tape. The ability to make the wheel turn around so the tape moves, and the microphone, the loud speaker puts forth the sound. This is all made possible by the energy supplied by the dry cell battery. There is potential for doing work stored in that battery. That is why it is called energy, ability to do something. The Lord, without exerting any effort on his part, can do everything through his energies. Parasya Shaktir Vividaiva. And he has many, many different kinds of energies, spiritual energies, material energies. And each of those two categories of energies exist in three aspects. Dravya Shakti Kriya Shaktir Gana Shaktir Iti. Some of his energies are Dravya Shaktis. They create substance. We have the three modes of material nature. From them all these different substances evolve. Tamas and Rajas and Sattva. By their combinations, the material substances, fire, earth, water, and in our bodies, the mucus, the air, the bones, the blood, these are made from combinations of the three modes. This is the Kriya Shakti of the Lord. Dravya Shakti. The substance creating potency. And that potency in its pure original form is acting in the spiritual world. Vishuddha Sattva, pure goodness. To create the Lord's abode and all the things and people that are present in that divine abode are created by his Sandini Shakti or his Dravya Shakti, his spiritual potency of substance, spiritual substance. There is substance, and then second, there is activity, Kriya. There are material activities, combinations of the modes, chemical combinations, physical activities. Gravity force is there. So when water comes to a cliff, it falls down and you have a waterfall. Flow of the water downward by the force of gravity. Kriya Shakti, active potency, potency of activity. Living beings, at least the animals, have motility. They have power to move. I can walk. I can walk around Govardhan Hill. I can walk 21 kilometers because I have Kriya Shakti. Potency to do, to move. And all creatures, even plants, they may not be able to walk, but they open their leaves, they move toward the light, they grow upward, their roots grow downward, they have limited motion. All living beings have motion. And even non-living things have motion. The wind blows, the lightning comes from the cloud down to the earth. Even the inert matter has some sort of activity. This is all function of the Lord's Kriya Shakti in the material world. Then his active potency is also there in the spiritual world. But all the activities in the spiritual world are part of Krishna's pleasure pastimes. Katāgānam nātyam gomanam. All the talking is song. All the walking is dance. That is the activity of the spiritual world. The pure original Kriya Shakti is arranging the activities of Krishna's pastimes with his devotees on the spiritual level. And then there is third, Jnana Shakti, the potency of consciousness. Consciousness is present not in the dead matter, but in the living beings. It is present in the Supreme Lord, and it is also a quality of the finite living beings. They have consciousness. They share that quality with the Supreme Lord. So the Jnana Shakti also acts in both realms, in its perverted form in the spiritual world and in its original pure form in the spiritual world. So these things are analyzed in Vedanta philosophy. Kapiladev, in his own version, although it's under the heading of Sankhya philosophy, it covers the same ground. Kapiladev's Sankhya is not in any way really different from Vyasadeva's Vedanta philosophy. It is the same. What the Bhagavatam teaches is the philosophy of Vedanta. And therefore the Bhagavatam is considered a natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. In the Garuda Purana, in the glorification of the Bhagavatam, it is stated, Bhashyoyam Brahma Sutranam. This Bhagavatam is a commentary, explains the Vedanta Sutra. The purpose of a bhashya, or commentary, is to help people who cannot understand the original text without further explanation. The text makes sense, it can be understood, but not by everybody. Some people are not experienced enough, they don't know all the technicalities, or they have some difficulty with the language. They need help, and therefore the spiritual authorities write commentaries on various texts to explain them. Especially as time goes on, from generation to generation, people become less and less intelligent and less well educated. So every generation, new commentaries have to be written to explain for the less intelligent people in each generation. Bhagavatam is a natural commentary on the Vedanta. Vedanta was written by Vyasadeva to philosophically explain the relationship of the Absolute Truth with his energies. Therefore, it is called Sharirika Bhashya, Sharirika Shastra. The Mayavadi commentary of Shankara is called Sharirika Bhashya. But it's called that because the name of the Vedanta is also Sharirika. The original Vedanta Sutra by Vyasadeva is also called Sharirika Bhashya, because it talks about the relationship of the Supreme with his energies, and you can conceive of the Supreme as the soul and everything that exists, all his energies, to comprise his body. So, description of the relationship between the soul and the body, that's the general topic of the Vedanta, Vedanta Sutras. Sharirika Bhasha, Sharirika Sutra. But the Bhagavatam is written for a much broader audience. Vedanta can be understood by professional philosophers and great sages, and it was understood better in previous ages. In Kali Yuga, there are so many different schools of thought, each presenting their commentaries on Vedanta and disagreeing over what the real meaning is. The Mayavadis have their explanation, the Vaishnavas have their several different explanations, and there's so much disagreement, so much confusion in Kali Yuga to understand what Vedanta is actually saying. But the Bhagavatam takes the same esoteric philosophical knowledge and presents it so that ordinary people, not just professional philosophers and sages, Sanskrit scholars, so that everybody can understand. Bhagavatam presents the same deep ideas, but in simple form, mostly in story form, or in the form of conversations and prayers offered by various persons to the Supreme Lord. In this palatable, entertaining form, the Bhagavatam is teaching the philosophy of Vedanta, but explaining it to us in a way we can understand. Akritrima Bhasha. According to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is the... Akritrima means artificial. And the opposite of that is natural. If I buy some strawberry ice cream, but that ice cream has never seen a real strawberry, it's just some chemical put in it, it's some red color, then that's artificial strawberry. Real strawberry means you put the piece of fruit into the cream and then make ice cream. That is natural. The natural commentary on Bhagavatam can be claimed to be such because it is written by the same author who wrote the original book. Who is more qualified to explain his book than the author himself? So the Bhagavatam is compiled by the same Bhadarayana Vyas who wrote the Vedanta Sutra. Therefore, it's the best explanation, the natural explanation by the author himself. Prabhupada, in discussing this in a lecture, told about one author in the 19th century, Bengali author, I forget his name. No, it was a Hindi author. He wrote a book, famous novel, probably still available, called Shah Jahan. Do you know the author? I think it's a Hindi novel. Shah Jahan is the name of the novel.
Shah Jahan.
You know, King Maharaj Shah Jahan. You know this book? It's supposed to be famous. And I think it's in Hindi.
Yeah.
Anyway, Prabhupada says that the author, one of his friends, asked him, why did you call the book Shah Jahan? Because I read the book, and it's mostly about Shah Jahan's son, Aurangzeb, or grandson, son. About all the bad things that Aurangzeb did, and how he put his father in jail and did so many other things. So why did you name the book after the wrong person? Why didn't you call the book Aurangzeb? And the author said, it's my book, I wrote it, I understand better than you and everybody else what the book is about. My idea, the author said, the central theme of the book, the central image, is the picture of Shah Jahan sitting in the Agra fort in his prison, locked up in jail by his father, and very sadly looking across the Jamuna River at the tomb of his wife, the Taj Mahal. So who is the real hero of the book? It is Shah Jahan. So therefore I call the book after Shah Jahan. It's my book. I know what it's about. So Prabhupada told that story to show, to exemplify that the author is the one best qualified to explain his own book. Therefore, Bhagavatam is the best explanation of Vedanta philosophy. In any way, our business is not really with dry philosophy. Although we are Vedantists, we're not interested in just arguing Vedanta Sutra. with the Mayavadis and with among one another, having debates with other Vaishnavs, even with ourselves, fighting, quarreling, disputing over what every little thing means. That's not our business. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I don't remember where, commented that the other Vaishnav Sampradayas, what they are practicing can be called Vicharatmika Bhakti. Bhakti that puts a focus on philosophical discourse and debate, vichara. But our version of bhakti in the Gaudiya Sampradaya is Rasatmika Bhakti. Bhakti that focuses on the pleasure of loving exchanges with Krishna in his pastimes. That's our focus, that's our interest. If we study Vedanta philosophy, it's for the purpose of becoming fit to develop the taste of relishing Krishna's activities and his beauty and his qualities and his loving relationships with his devotees. We want to know about, we want to understand the relationship of God and his energies, because we want to have a personal relationship with God. We're not going to spend the rest of our lives quibbling over the details of dry philosophy. Not in this sampradaya. We shouldn't. Bhavadham is presenting these things, but to train us up to understand what Krishna really is, what it means to be God. We should understand that philosophically, scientifically. And then when we read the description of Krishna's pleasure pastimes, especially in the 10th canto, we will not misunderstand. We will understand properly who Krishna is, who this boy who is passing urine in his neighbor's houses, who is dancing with other men's wives and killing so many opponents that rivers of blood are flowing. Who this is? This is not an ordinary person, and he's not a myth, not a fiction. He's real, and he's actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that means everything that exists, everything that happens, is the expansion of his energies. So we do need a basic understanding of Vedanta philosophy in order to properly know who Krishna is. Otherwise, we will not understand his pastimes. We'll take them to be unreal, or we'll take them to be something cheap like our own foolish activities. Therefore, the Bhagavatam teaches us enough Vedanta philosophy, as much as we need to know, to become properly appreciative of Krishna's position and become really attracted to him, not just superficially. Therefore, we should study Vedanta through the Bhagavatam. We don't need more, and we shouldn't be satisfied with less. We shouldn't neglect reading these parts of the Bhagavatam that are philosophical, because we do need to learn these things. And we don't really need to go further than that. You know, we shouldn't get obsessed with all this philosophical jargon and all this quibbling over minor details. You know, which energy does that? What's the actual order of the shells of the universe? How does a super soul actually enter the atom? It's not our business to know. That's his business. You know, a magician has his tricks. How does he pull a rabbit out of the hat? You may be able to figure it out, but then you spoil the whole fun. You know, someone gets up in the audience and says, I know how he did that. You know, I know how he got the rabbit out of the hat. He had it hiding in his sleeve. Or, you know, but then he spoils it for everybody else. No fun. So what's the use of knowing how the super soul enters the atom? That's his trick. You know, even if you can figure it out, what business is it of yours to know? That's his business to know. We don't need to know everything. We do need to know enough to appreciate that Krishna is actually the supreme controller and supreme friend of everybody. That's all. And Bhagavatam teaches us that much, no more, no less. We should be satisfied with that. Sarva Vedanta Sadam Hi Sri Bhagavatam Ishyate Tadra Samrita Triptasya Nanyatra Syat Rati Kwachit. Srimad Bhagavatam, this is a statement from the next to last chapter of the last canto of the Bhagavatam, spoken by Suta Goswami in his final
glorification of the Bhagavatam. Summing up, saying something nice at the end to glorify the Bhagavatam. You don't want to say something weak. You want to say something strong when you get to that point. You have to wrap it up and make a nice ending, a nice conclusion. So he glorifies the Bhagavatam. And you don't want to say something exaggerated or not true either. Faint praise is an indirect way of condemning somebody by not praising him sufficiently. But if you praise somebody by telling things that aren't even true, exaggerated, then that's also not real, giving real honor. You should praise a person or a thing for what it really is worth. So this is a truthful statement, an accurate statement, not exaggeration. Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi. Shri Bhagavatam Ishyate. The Srimad Bhagavatam contains the essence of all Vedanta philosophy. That's a very strong glorification, and it's true. Whatever of importance is found in the Vedanta Sutra, in the Upanishads, in any of the Acharya's explanations of these texts, is very clearly presented in Srimad Bhagavatam. Sarva Vedanta Saram. Maybe the language is different. Maybe the technicalities are left out. But the essence is all there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, tat rasam ritra triptasya nanyatra syatvati kuchit. Someone who has actually developed a taste for the pleasurable mellows, rasa, of the Bhagavatam, should not have any interest in any other literature, any other kind of philosophy, any other endeavor. We should not be interested to hear anything other than Krishna's names, the Gita and the Bhagavatam, and discussions about Krishna and his pastimes, and discussions about the devotees and Krishna's service. We have no reason to be interested in any other literature than Srimad Bhagavatam. Tadva Samrita Triptasya. If you're really tasting the nectar of the Bhagavatam, you won't have a taste for any other book. You won't be interested. You won't want to waste your time with something that has much less of a taste. Much less taste is measured according to quantity and quality. Something may be sweet, another thing may be not sweet at all. But there's degrees of sweetness. There's kind of taste, and there's degree of the taste. So Bhagavatam, in kind and in degree, is the most relishable. The taste of dry philosophy is not pleasant. It doesn't satisfy the heart. You can study philosophy from decades, and it will not satisfy your heart. But the rasa, the blissful taste of a personal relationship with Krishna, that satisfies the heart. Savai pum sam paro dharmo yato bhaktir hoksaje. This is the highest responsibility of human life, to do whatever will enable you to attain loving devotion for the transcendental Lord. Otherwise, your endeavors are all fruitless, and your yayatma supersedity. By doing something to develop attraction to Krishna, your heart will become fully satisfied. And otherwise, no matter what you do, your heart will remain unsatisfied. No matter how much philosophy you study, no matter how much work you do, no matter how much charity you give, no matter how severe austerities you perform, and now, no matter how successful you are in the practice of yoga, if you don't develop attraction to Krishna or to one of his expansions, then your heart will never be satisfied. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami shakoli ashanta Krishna bhakta nishkama ato eva shanta. The yogis, the gyanis, and the karmis have selfish desires, and therefore they're not satisfied in their hearts. They're not peaceful. They're disturbed by their unsatisfied and unsatisfiable desires. But a real devotee of Krishna has no selfish desires. only desire to satisfy Krishna and serve the Vaishnavas. Therefore, he's peaceful and happy. Vyasadeva and all the sages, all the demigods, all the devotees who ever lived, they just want us to be happy. The sages at Naimisharanya were discussing this. Yenatma supersedati. What will make the soul actually happy? They performed their sacrifice at Naimisharanya for many years in order to help the living entities in Kali Yuga avoid being miserable and be happy. And they concluded that the study of Srimad Bhagavatam and the holy names of Krishna, these will give satisfaction and peace to the disturbed living entities in Kali Yuga. Krishna Bhakta Nishkama, a devotee of one who has developed devotion for Krishna, who no longer is living a selfish life, but is living only for Krishna's pleasure. He's free from agitation of the mind.